It's Tuesday, October 6th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com.
Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. I'm on the last leg of the Puff Puff Pass Tour, as it is come to be known, here in Orlando, Florida. I'm actually recording the podcast here from the bedroom of the president of the University of Central Florida chapter of Normal, UCF Normal. And thanks very much to Tyler and Raphael and all the folks out here at UCF Normal for having me out. Tomorrow I will be speaking at the college. This will be 7 p.m. at the University of Central Florida's Student Union Building. This will be in room 218 AB. I'll be giving a one-hour presentation and speech and taking questions and answers, so look forward to meeting anyone here from the Central Florida area that would like to come down for the speech tomorrow at 7 p.m. It's quite interesting over these past couple of weeks to be hanging out with all of the young college people, first at the University of Wisconsin in Madison and now down here in Orlando at University of Central Florida. And I'm really energized by their enthusiasm for ending adult marijuana prohibition. I'm so jealous of the generation now that has grown up with the internet and Google and can directly confront these lies that are told to them by our federal government regarding the finest plant on this planet. It's a great position you're in, and I know this will be the generation to finally overturn this stupid war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. Also wanted to give a mention to some of the folks that had been listening to the podcast on Monday and noted the different tone and the quality of my voice. I am suffering through a little bit of a head cold, which of course makes flying even that much more fun, and you know how much I love flying. But still powering through it. It's not so bad. I'm able to get some sleep, and things are going to be just fine. So don't worry about Radical Russ. I'll sleep more when it's legal.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
Time now to check out our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at norml.org/calendar. Coming up tomorrow on Wednesday in Lansing, Michigan, there's going to be a march on the Capitol. Folks will be meeting at the Gone Wired Cafe at 9 a.m. for a pre-meeting rally, and then march to the Capitol and rally on the Capitol steps to protest the recent arrests of legal patients and caregivers in the state of Michigan. For more information, check out www.medicalmarijuanafreedommarch.com. On Friday, October 9th, the Cannabis Common Sense television show will go out over the airwaves, or cable access, that is, in Portland, Oregon, Denver, Colorado, Seattle, Washington, and many other locations. You can catch it streaming live on the internet at ustream.tv. Just search for Cannabis Common Sense. And if you'd like to get Cannabis Common Sense placed on your local cable access station, they've got a way to help you figure it out. Just send me an email at stash@normal.org, and I'll put you in touch with the people that can help you out. This weekend on Saturday, October 10th, Normal of Waco, Texas will be having their monthly meeting. That's at Papa Rolo's Pizza at 703 North Valley Mills Drive. There's a map and more information at the calendar site. Also on Saturday, Kansas City Normal will be having a cannabis education and enlightenment. This is a fundraiser and membership drive with LEAP speaker Brian Leininger. Also music by DJ Jabberrock, Nicolette Page, Mouth Seed Love, and Reach. So all sorts of information and lots of fun to be had at the Kansas City Normal Cannabis Education and Enlightenment. Check out kcnormal.org for more information. And finally, Sunday, October 11th, Philly Normal will be involved with the Making Strides Against Breast Cancer of Philadelphia Walk. I really encourage everyone to get involved with this and look in your area as to how your Normal chapter can help get involved in other community events. We need to integrate ourselves with the rest of the mainstream society so that they can see they have nothing to fear from average, responsible adult cannabis consumers. For more information on any of these events, check out normal.org/calendar or send me an email at stash@normal.org.
It's a Normal shout-out.
Our shout-out today goes to all the wonderful college-aged people who have been contacting me through email and are interested in starting their own college chapter of Normal. It's really pretty easy. All you've got to do is to get yourself and four other students to join Normal at our special reduced $15 student rate. It's a secret link, though, so if you want that link to start your college chapter, you've got to send me an email at stash@normal.org. Once you've got your five people joined to Normal, you then form a student organization in accordance with your student government's policies, and as soon as they recognize you as an official student organization, you can apply for affiliation with Normal, and there you go, you are a Normal official college chapter. With the Normal name, you can get the cut rate prices on all of our official Normal merchandise, which you can use for fundraising for your chapter, and you can pursue changing the marijuana policies on your college campus, your local community, or even on a statewide level. The limits are only your imagination and ability to get people organized. For more information, again, send me an email at stash@normal.org. Now, coming up on your daily audio stash, we begin with your hemp headlines, including a story that's been reprinted once again in the Chicago Tribune from 2008. This is a story called What Parents Need to Know About Pot. And I'm taking on all of their misstatements right here on the stash. We've also got a story about three men in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, who will be doing felony time for little less than 1/2 ounce of marijuana. And in one of the coolest cannabis jobs possible, the Westword alternative weekly paper in Denver, Colorado, is looking for a cannabis dispensary critic. That's my kind of thumbs up, thumbs down job. In our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we bring you some music from Portland, Oregon, a band called Pass Margo, and their song Election Day. And then for our cannabis community segment, we're going to be playing more audio from the Normal National Convention that took place September 24th through 26th, just recently in San Francisco, California. This will be a panel on pot and parenting, moderated by Dr. Marsha Rosenbaum, and featuring PBS travel writer Rick Steves, West Coast cannabis publisher Ngayo Bielam, Colorado attorneys Rob and Jessica Corey, Washington farmer George Rohrbacher, and our own Dr. Mitch Earlywine, all discussing the pitfalls of raising kids in the era of modern cannabis consumption and what to tell your children about pot. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now,
now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. What parents need to know about pot, Truth Edition. Via Twitter, I received the plea from a reader named Lindsay Diane that pointed to this newly released article in the Chicago Tribune entitled, What Parents Need to Know About Pot. She wrote, "This article is full of blatant lies. Please email to set them straight." Well, we will do, and we'll also note that this article is something they already published once before in 2008. What Parents Need to Know About Pot. Marijuana packs a bigger wallop now than it did in the 70s. Parents may just want to listen up. The most recent national survey on drug use and health found that among marijuana users over age 12, almost 35% used marijuana 20 or more days in the past month. Ah, statistics. What stood out to you in that sentence? Did you get age 12, 35%? And 20 days a month? Preceded by a call to parents, right? Oh my God! One-third of our kids are getting stoned two-thirds of the time! But here's the thing. That's all marijuana users over age 12, even the ones age 18 to 100 who are long past needing their parents' guidance on adult decisions. Now, indeed, the statistic is true. Nice thing about the intertubes, though, is that you can check their math. Visit the Substance Abuse Mental Health Data Archive, it's called SAMHDA, S-A-M-H-D-A, and you can run something called Quick Tables. You can choose four different measures of marijuana use, like number of days used marijuana in the past 12 months. You can choose eight different respondent characteristics, like age group. Then it will build you the table and even a bar graph, if you like. So, there are about 248 million Americans aged 12 and older. For the 25 million people aged 12 and older who will smoke marijuana this year, it is true that 35.6% of them will smoke 100 days or more in the past year. So, not exactly 20 or more days a month, more like 8 or more days a month. But for the 12 to 17 age group, the number is actually 28%. Now, that still sounds scary, huh? But this is just the numbers of the kids who do smoke pot. There are 25 million kids aged 12 to 17, and only 880,000 of them are smoking pot 8 or more times a month. That's 3.5% of all kids. Think of it as 7 out of 200 getting stoned one-fourth of the time. Not 1 out of 3 getting stoned two-thirds of the time. I still think that's not a great number, but then I'd point out that these are the results that have been achieved through 40 years of drug war. These are the results achieved when the government spends $1 billion on teen anti-drug ads that actually encouraged marijuana use. In the same period of time, we have reduced cigarette smoking among 12th graders, from 3 out of 4 having tried a cigarette in 1977 to now where less than half have done so. If you'd like to read the rest of my debunking of that Chicago Tribune story, check it out in the lengthy post on stash.normal.org. Three Sheboygan men facing 18 months imprisonment for unauthorized camping while high. Three Sheboygan County men have been charged with felony marijuana possession after being busted while camping in a state wildlife refuge this summer, according to a criminal complaint. Charges were filed Friday against Patrick J. Wims, Brian L. Parman, and David H. Parman, based on marijuana discovered August 28th by a Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources warden, the complaint said. All three have prior marijuana convictions, making the possession offense a felony, with a maximum penalty of 18 months in prison. The Parmans, who also had pipes, were charged with misdemeanor possession of drug paraphernalia, and all three men were cited for camping in an unauthorized area. Brian Parman was cited for starting a fire in an unauthorized area. All right,
These guys didn't do the smartest thing, possessing pot and pipes while camping and burning illegally. Steinborn's rule says only break one law at a time. Now they will be considered felons and possibly do a year and a half of hard time just because they were unlucky or dumb enough to get caught with pot more than once. So what egregious offense did these three men commit that is so deserving of the Wisconsin taxpayer dollars it will cost to keep them incarcerated for 18 months, and not to mention the court and prosecutorial and even perhaps public defender time? Five men were at the site, and three had marijuana in their pockets. Wims, age 29, had 4.3 grams, Brian Parman, age 43, had 9.6 grams, and David Parman, age 38, had 0.5 grams. A half ounce of weed between three guys, worth anywhere from $25 to $200, depending on quality, is going to cost Wisconsin how much? Oh, Google, won't you pull me up a handy criminal justice public policy paper from a prestigious Wisconsin university to help make my point? The average cost to the state of incarcerating an inmate for 1 year in a state facility in fiscal year 2002 was approximately $25,985. All right, let's see. Three guys, 18 months. Carry the two. Yeah, that's $116,932.50, isn't it? Then let's consider the 18 months these men won't be contributing anything in payroll or sales taxes to Wisconsin. Perhaps their wives and kids have to get state assistance from Wisconsin when these men's income are interrupted. Maybe these men's Wisconsin employers also have to recruit, hire, and train people to replace them. But at least for Wisconsin's six-figure investment, it will be slightly more difficult, but not impossible, for them to get some marijuana to smoke in prison. And then when they get out and can't get decent work because they're felons, maybe they can earn a little money by dealing weed. Westward in Denver, looking for Cannabis Critic. Okay. I think I have a pretty cool job in the world of marijuana that doesn't involve selling it, but this position for the Alt Weekly paper in Denver, Colorado may have mine beat. New York Times. Westward, an alternative weekly newspaper in Denver, has the standard lineup of film, food, and music critics. But in what may be a first for American journalism, the paper is shopping around for a medical marijuana critic. The idea is not to assess the green stuff itself, but to review the dispensaries that have sprouted like, weeds in Denver this year. Quote, "We want to see what kind of place it is, how well they care for you, and also how sketchy the place is," said Patricia Calhoun, editor of Westward. "Do they actually look at your medical marijuana card? Do they let you slip some cash under the counter and bypass the rules? It is the Wild West of medical marijuana out here. There were a couple of dozen dispensaries this spring, and now it's over 100. We just heard there's going to be a drive-through dispensary," end quote. Dispensaries promote different strains with distinctive flavors. There are, after all, marijuana snobs, just as there are wine snobs. And some mix their wares into foods like hummus, pesto, and chocolate. So why not critique the cannabis too? Ms. Calhoun said, quote, "It could well be that we will be reviewing the product itself, eventually," end quote. Wow, I gotta give that two snaps up in a Z formation.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America, and it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normalnorml.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling while promoting the message of reform. To donate your song for possible use on the stash, enter it in the next Marijuana Music Awards contest today.
Pass Margo is a Portland, Oregon-based band I had the fortune to hear at the Portland Hempstock this year. I love the stripped-down, guitar-based drums, three-piece rock and roll these guys put out. You can check them out on MySpace at myspace.com/PassMargo. This song is from their debut album, also entitled Pass Margo, and it is called Election Day.
Individuals.
Yeah.
And we just want y'all to know that weed helps, you know what I'm saying? So I just want y'all to stop messing with the people who need it to live. It's helping people out there with cancer, AIDS, you know what I'm saying? So y'all gotta let it be, man. Legalize this.
Effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, party politics, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the Marijuana Smokers Lobby,
Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers.
For our Normal Newsmakers segment, we're going to be giving you the Pot and Parenting panel that took place at the Normal National Conference, September 25th, 2009. This is chaired by Dr. Marsha Rosenbaum, Director Emeritus of the Drug Policy Alliance, and features Ngayo Beelam, a publisher of West Coast Cannabis Magazine and professional comedian, Rick Steves, the popular travel host on PBS and author of top 10 selling European travel books, Jessica Corey, a civil liberties attorney and public policy advocate in Colorado, and her husband Rob Corey, a criminal defense attorney in Denver, Colorado, George Rohrbacher, a member of the Normal Board of Directors and a farmer from Eastern Washington, and Dr. Mitch Earlywine, an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. This is the introductions from the first third of the Pot and Parenting panel. To hear the entire 90-minute panel, please check out our special events feed, which you can find on the right sidebar on stash.normal.org.
Marsha Rosenbaum, thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you all for coming back from the 420 break. I think that set a really good example for your children and for mine. So what we're going to do, what format we're going to use, is we're going to borrow from the format of two panels ago. And we have a large panel of really talented people who have given a lot of thought to the issue of pot, parenting, legalization. And so what I'd like to start by doing is by going through the row and having everyone give about 3 minutes of your name, who you are, and what brings you to this particular concern, and what you think qualifies you to talk about this issue. So let's start by I'll start. So I have been at this for 30 years. My daughter's 31 and my son is 25. And I've been thinking about the issue of parenting and teenagers and drugs since my daughter graduated from the DARE program and came home to tell me that I may not realize this. Mom, you may not know this, but if a person uses marijuana, they are going to be addicted for the rest of their life. So that's when I began to pay attention to the messages that kids were getting and have been talking to other parents, writing about this issue for some years. It is the third rail of drug policy reform. It has to be addressed. Parents are concerned. They're confused and concerned, and they want to do the right thing by their kids. They're fearful their kids are going to smoke pot and fall through the cracks. And so in terms of when we talk about legalization and what that might mean, this is an important subject to think about. And so I'm going to rely on the panel to come up with some answers. So we'll just start.
Well, I'm not, I guess I'm qualified here just because my wife and I have raised two teenagers, and now they're 19 and 22, and they seem to have gotten through it just fine. Obviously, kids, as Marsha said, is a very important issue. When we talk about pushing our agenda forward, we've got to address the real need that people are afraid of what's the impact on kids. I've talked to a lot of people up in the Seattle area about this lately. I just had dinner with a police officer who's a captain in the narcotics division there, and boy, he said the one thing cops really want to do other than enforce the law is minimize violence and protect kids. Protect kids is the driving thing. I just talked to a friend of mine who runs a coffee shop in Amsterdam yesterday. And the big news is they've closed down 40 coffee shops because they're within 300 meters of schools. So the Dutch are concerned about this also. It makes sense not to have pot marketed to kids at school. One reason I got into this is very similar when I heard what Marcia was saying. It's I've got friends that are pretty hip, but they're school teachers, and they fear for their job because they can't be honest about drug policy issues because of the terror of having to be hard and party line on drugs when it comes to being your role as a teacher. And when they got a drug or a DARE agent in their teacher's lounge, and this is an elite high school in Seattle, a private school where you've got really smart and great and committed teachers, they hear all this propaganda, and you can hear a pin drop. Nobody can even raise their question and ask a question about some of the one-sided information that's coming their way that they're supposed to be a conduit for. And I just thought that's humiliating to teachers to have to parrot that kind of reefer madness kind of stuff that is in the interest of kids, but wrong-minded, I think. So to me, credibility of teachers, credibility of us as parents is really important, and I've given quite a bit of thought to this just from the credibility point of view. I had the joy of inviting Keith Stroop over to our house when I was dropping the bombshell on my family that I was going to be a board member of Normal, and I wanted my kids to meet Keith and find out what made him tick and why a lawyer would dedicate his life to an ideal and a civil liberty rather than a rich client's legal problems, you know? And it was one of my favorite moments as a parent was to introduce our kids to somebody who could speak so eloquently about this as Keith could in a family dinner setting. I think the parenting issue is something that is an exciting challenge, but we have to be candid with our kids and honest with our kids and have credibility with our kids.
Hi, my name is Ngai Obilam. I'm a comedian and an activist, and I publish West Coast Cannabis Magazine, and I have two kids, age 10 and 8. And like he says, you have to be honest. I'm almost forced to be honest because it's not really a secret that I smoke marijuana. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's in my act. I run the magazine. They know. So there's no hiding about it. And, you know, I wasn't always as careful when they were little as maybe I should be. I picked up my daughter from school one time, and she's like, "Hey, Dad, you know, the whole car smells like weed." And I'm like, "Shut up. The principal's right there. We're all going to get detention. Just be cool." But, no, I mean, my kids know because I take them to movies and whatnot, and they know that they should go ahead and get their tickets while Dad catches up. But it's also, we talked about, it's an adult thing, you know what I'm saying? We don't give them booze either, right? So when they get older, they can make the decision for themselves. It's really like teaching and education. When I was a kid, when I was in fifth grade here in San Francisco, for a week and a half, 2 weeks, the teachers, just all they talked about was drugs. But they didn't, like, try to scare us. They read stories from people who had taken drugs. They read, like, statistics. They showed you the things that could happen. They talked about what was addicting psychologically or physiologically. And it gave everybody an understanding. And I think that's just more education because, like, I like to smoke a lot of weed, but I've never done coke or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? I like mushrooms, but I've never done acid or anything like that. But, so it's really about education and be able to make the right choice. And you have to give your kids that foundation because these cats come in and they want to scare kids. Kids like to be scared. You know, they go to scary movies and stuff all the time. They always want to try and see what's dangerous. But if they can make an educated decision, if you're raising your kids and your kids are halfway smart, which most of your kids should be, then I think you would have a better chance. And now I'm rambling, so I'm going to pass it on. And if you have questions later, you just... I just wanted to pass, take two hits and pass the mic.
Maybe I will take it. Thank you. I will take your mic. My name is Robert Corey. I'm here with my wife, Jessica Corey. We're from the Mile High City of Denver, Colorado. And did you know a little bit of trivia about Colorado? Our official state song is now Rocky Mountain High by John Denver. How cool is that? All right. I think this, I've heard the rumor that this conference may be in Denver in 2011. I'm not sure about that. I hope that happens. It'll be a great time for everyone. All right, pot and parenting. I'm a parent of two daughters, age 4 and 1, beautiful little towheads that we didn't bring to this conference. Being the responsible parents we are, we left them behind. We do bring them to press conferences, and we bring them to the Aspen conference, and they're fine. They love it there, and they have a great time, and they have a great time hanging out with all of us. And, you know, they're a little young, so they're not going to be partaking in the medicine, for a little bit of time anyway. I'm here as somebody who tried it when I was 14 years old, growing up in Iowa. My parents, you know, treated it right. I mean, I was very lucky. I had great parents. They're the example for me in how I'm going to deal with it. I remember on one occasion, my dad caught me with a mason jar in my room, and even then I was storing it properly. I had it in a, had a bunch of it in a mason jar, and my dad found it, you know, and my dad was a physician and he had access to a laboratory. He was a, professor at the University of Iowa Medical School, and he said, "Oh, I'm going to take this in and get some of the medical students and we're going to analyze this to make sure we're going to see what this is, you know." And, I didn't figure out what he meant by analyze it. And then he came back to me a few days later and said, "Yes, my students and I analyzed this and we did conclude that it is marijuana." And so we, you know, and I didn't figure that out, what he really meant by analyze, till years later. So, that was cool. And then when I was in high school, I used to, clean my pot on my desk in my room. I had a plant on my windowsill. It was just a, you know, regular window plant. I didn't want to put the seeds in my garbage can, the seeds and the stems, because my mom, who occasionally took out the garbage, would find them there. So like an idiot, I would put the seeds and the stems just in this plant. And, this, you know, this went on for a few months. I went off to college. And then one night, my sister called me up and said, "You know, there's a pot plant growing in your room, Robbie." And it's just, you know, that's how dumb I was as a kid, putting seeds in soil. Eventually, they're going to sprout into something. So, and my parents dealt with that properly too. So I was lucky. I want to be that kind of parent someday. I want to be the parent that is not going to be, negative about it to my children, going to be rational about it, balanced about it. And I think all of us are capable of that. That being said, you know, I represent clients in Colorado in courts who have literally lost their children to social services because of marijuana use, and for no other reason. No abuse, nothing whatsoever except for marijuana use. And that simply, ladies and gentlemen, is just evil. I mean, that a government that takes children away from parents who only use marijuana and do nothing else wrong to their children is simply wrong. And it's evil, but it is a risk. It is a risk to us all out there, and we've got to be careful about it. We've got to be careful about what we tell our children. Children are, and DARE, obviously, I'm not an expert in DARE yet. I hope to become one as my daughters grow up. DARE counsels a Soviet-style informant culture. I mean, they tell children to inform on their parents. Again, just evil and wrong. We've got to change this. A lot of this has to change. But in the meantime, before that changes, we need to be careful out there. And not to be a downer, but it is the reality. And, so I'm hoping that we can move past this, but in the meantime, also be careful, because, you know, these people who lose their children, that is, for most people, that is worse than being in prison, to lose your child because of marijuana. It is a horrible thing, because from a parent's perspective, not only is the parent suffering, but the child is suffering too in this evil system of social services. And so we do have to be careful, and I want to counsel that as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you all so much for allowing the Corey delegation to be up at the table together. I am, as many of you know, the token Republican pro-life mom, married mom, actually. There's a lot of us. In fact, when Russ called me from High Times and told me that I had won Freedom Fighter of the Month, this was a huge moment. There was somebody else in my household who was a little bit jealous, but turns out I beat out all other four pro-life Republican mom marijuana activists in the country. So it was a huge competition, and I'm deeply honored. But let me be serious really quickly about two things. First, there's a parent among us today who had every reason to not show up, and that is Phil Smith, who lost his son Travis this week, actually buried his son on Tuesday. And are you here? Is he here? Yeah, if you'd stand up, because he's here so that one day my kids can be free from government abuse. So thank you. I I mean that. We thought about you all last night. You are a true inspiration to every parent in this room. So, to me, this movement is not about getting baked or stoned or high or medicine or, I mean, it's, I guess to a certain extent, once or twice a year when my husband gets me to break down and, you know, turn on the vaporizer, I get a little crazy. But really what it's about for me is freedom from government. And, earlier this year, I got a call, thanks through Alan, for the CBS early morning show to go on and talk about, marijuana prohibition and the growing number of mothers who are taking a stand. And I told the producer about my view. I said, if I never smoke marijuana again a day in my life, I don't care. I'm fine with that. And she said, well, we need you to admit on air that you smoke pot. And I said, well, I don't smoke pot except, you know, on very rare occasions. Why is that an essential part of the story? Why can't there be people out there who believe that this drug war is destroying our country and yet not have any desire to get high? I don't understand that, and that was a real eye-opener for me because I have a lot of educating to do. When it comes to our kid, like my husband Rob said, we have a 4- and 1-year-old daughter. I think about it in these terms. How do I explain to my girls that some people who smoke pot go to prison and other people who smoke pot end up in the White House? How do I explain to my girls that we spend $30,000 a year to incarcerate nonviolent drug offenders in this country and yet $10,000 to educate the average public school student? How do I explain to my girls that doctors in our own state, including our friends who've devoted their professional careers and their entire lives to helping the sick and the dying, that these people are being threatened with losing their licenses by recommending medical marijuana? How do I explain to them that the DEA is dictating the type of research we do at our taxpayer-funded medical schools? I can't explain that, and I won't explain it to them and try and justify it. This is about freedom to be a parent, and it's also about the highest form of patriotism, which is taking a stand when others won't. I first got involved in this movement in 2004, when I was running for the Colorado Senate. I was 25 years old, very green, but we ran the closest race in the state. We got 48% against a 2-term incumbent who outspent us by $400,000. But during that campaign, everybody came up to me, all the strategists, and they said, you know, your husband, he's great, which of course means blue-eyed blonde, Stanford-educated lawyer, and, you know, soulmate. He's just beautiful. But they had a little problem with Rob. I didn't see the problem, but the problem was that Rob liked to talk about marijuana publicly, and that was not going to serve me well with my Republican base. And maybe that's the reason I lost, because I'm married to Denver's best, well, Warren Edson's in here, so one of the best, and so is, oh, wait, no, Brian Vicente's here too. Okay, he's one of the best marijuana lawyers in Denver, but I'm glad he got me to take a stand. And I took a stand a few years later in the Denver Post and was honored when Karen Tandy, President Bush's DEA chief, trashed me personally, accused me of exploiting my kids. Well, that letter went in the girls' baby books. Because you know what? For decades now, the government has been exploiting children. And everybody said, when you have kids, you'll see you want the government. You want all the help that you can get raising your kids. And I tell you this, if for one moment I could believe that prohibition would stop my kids from consuming illegal drugs, I might take that sacrifice my philosophy of freedom and smaller government to make it happen. But the fact of the matter is prohibition encourages kids to use all different types of substances, and encourages them to do it in closed-door environments. And so to Karen Tandy, who would accuse me of exploiting my children and was so concerned about what I'll do when they're 16 and they decide to experiment, I say this. If I get a call at 2 in the morning, I'd much rather have it be from my girls than from some cop. And when my daughters apply for college, if they have the misfortune of having a marijuana conviction, I hope that we don't still live in an era where our government takes all financial aid away from kids who've been caught with pot and yet still gives aid to guys who beat their girlfriends. It doesn't make sense. So with that, I'll wrap up, but thank you for having me. I just want to say we have a voter here, so, and I have his support. We'll be taking political contributions.
Hi, I'm George Rohrbacher. I'm a member of Normal's board of directors. I'm a cattle rancher. I'm from eastern Washington State, live in a county called Klickitat that's about 100 miles long, 40 miles wide, has 17,000 people. In a community that small, they remember if you cut a fart at a meeting 10 years earlier.
Sounds like the pain still lingers.
And we moved to that community, well, it was sort of a knee-jerk reaction to the Back to the Earth movement back in the late 60s. And I got a job teaching school. My wife worked in a bank. We rented a little farm. And 4 years later, we were farming full-time and sold an irrigated farm and bought a cattle ranch in 1976 where all of our kids were born. I've got three sons and a daughter ranging from 35 to 26. And I've got seven grandkids. I started this summer with four grandkids, but we had three over the summer. And, well, and even better than that, our 29-year-old daughter got married at the ranch. We talked about it as sort of Woodstock without the mud because we live in the dry part of the state, but after 14 weeks of no rain, it rained on Labor Day weekend. But that gave us double rainbows over the marriage ceremony. So there is an upside to every downside. My story is really different than everyone else on this panel because essentially I spent the last two decades before I joined the Normal board hiding out. Hiding out so secretively that I had one lifeline to marijuana for the last 15 years that I was hiding out. One. And actually when I interviewed, to join the Normal board, that was the first time in over a decade I had smoked pot with a stranger. That's how deep in cover I was. And my wife was a school superintendent at the time. And in fact, one of the things I'm very proud about, Annie, is the DARE program was starting up when she was being a school superintendent, and she said, well, this sounds interesting. You know, we should protect our kids against drugs. Show me your stuff. She heard the stuff, and she said, you ain't coming into my school. essentially, our part of hiding out in a community that has a memory of that length is that we had essentially a don't ask, don't tell, we ain't going to talk about it policy at home. All my kids had seen the photos. Does this look like an aged hippie up here? Well, he was a much younger hippie at once upon a time, and my kids know that. And so what we did in terms of drug education for our kids, I'm the oldest of five. My wife's the second oldest of seven. Our combined siblings and their spouses, first and second, and actually there's one that's on a third, is a combined population of 29 baby boomers. And as we all know, that generation had more access to more drugs of more kinds than any population in the history of the world. Okay, here we are 40 years later. What happened to those 29 people? Interesting sample group. Eight of them ended up in alcohol treatment for some reason or another. One of them ended up in cocaine treatment, and another one, my youngest sister-in-law, ended up as a heroin addict who went through treatment and to me today is one of the greatest examples of the resiliency of the human spirit when supported properly. And we as a family supported her properly. And she came back unbelievably well. Anyway, while these various familial train wrecks were happening, we were completely open to the degree that shocked my wife's sisters, that they just wouldn't talk to their kids about what Brother David had just done, or, you know, the fact that Ann's dad got a DUI, had to spend the night in jail. We talked to our kids about that. And my oldest son, Blake, who's, well, he went off to college at 16 and graduated at 20 and didn't take a drink the entire time. And I didn't find out until he graduated that watching the disasters, the train wrecks in our family over alcohol, he had made a decision when he was 14 or 15 that I'm not going to take a drink until I'm 21. Imagine going through your entire undergraduate education, standing at a party with a beer like this, and not drinking it. That's my son, Blake. Basically, my job as a parent through those years was to stay as silent and as deep in cover as I could to protect my children. When my youngest son, Phil, became 18 and he could visit me in jail should I get arrested, I decided my job as a parent was to get as loud and as active about this to make sure that my children and my grandchildren and your grandchildren don't get crushed under the wheel of marijuana prohibition.
I'm Mitch Earlywine. I'm associate professor of psychology at the University of Albany, and I'm the author of Understanding Marijuana. Like a lot of clinical psychologists, I have the occasional adolescent substance abuser in a private practice. And like a lot of clinical psychologists, I think I know everything, and I'm a complete narcissist. But I decided also I might as well go ahead and review the drug prevention literature, and it actually appears in a book called The Parent's Guide to Marijuana. It was published by High Times. Understanding Marijuana is published by Oxford. I'm the only person who's ever published with both of those presses. I have daughters who are basically 5 and 8. The little one sees the Canadian flag. Marijuana! The column High Times comes to our mailbox every month, and inside is a column I write. There are books all over our house with big five leafers on the cover and our name on the spine. I think they know what's up, just like my colleagues over here. But nevertheless, I did go ahead and take a look at this big literature, and it's the theme in the Parent's Guide, and that's just emphasizing both the buffers that we've already established against developing marijuana problems, and the key that really drug prevention from a parent's perspective is part of a much larger relationship. The key issues in those relationships seem to be genuineness, empathy, and warmth. Genuineness being literally telling the truth, empathy being, I don't know exactly what it's like to be you, but I know how to have these kinds of feelings. I've been frustrated. I've been upset, even if I've never been a 14-year-old girl at a Jewish day school. And warmth, literally, like, how do I get across to you that I love you? And it's curious, but the data are often suggesting simple things like every time we greet, I touch you. Every time we leave, I touch you. Those are pretty much, I think, great ways to live a life. And if we can't deal with policy in the next couple of days, let's at least strengthen our relationships with our kids.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. for everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with thoughts of thanks for all the folks out here on the Puff Puff Pass Tour who have helped me out so much during my travels. And just to give you a little foreshadowing, we're looking to have more of these travels take place and to more places than just the Northeast and the West Coast. I'm trying to put together the Radical Russ Road Tour, where I will take my PowerPoint presentations a la Al Gore and An Inconvenient Truth all around the country to spread the growing truth about cannabis. We'll be looking for sponsors and advertising for this tour, and we'll need help from the local Normal chapters and places where there aren't local Normal chapters especially in order to get this cross-country tour taking place. I don't know when, I don't know where yet, but it's kind of in the formative stages, so get to thinking about it. Thanks a lot, everybody. We hope to see more of you later, and thanks for tuning in to the Daily Audio Stash. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.